eccentricities. We walked for a while longer, but he still didn't show me any plants, nor did he pick any of them. He simply breezed through the bushes, touching them gently. Then he came to a halt and sat down on a rock and told me to rest and look around. I insisted on talking. Once more, I let him know that I wanted very much to learn about plants, especially peyote. I pleaded with him to become my informant in exchange for some sort of monetary reward. "You don't have to pay me," he said. "You can ask me anything you want. I'll tell you what I know, and then I'll tell you what to do with it." He asked me if I agreed with the arrangement. I was delighted. Then he added a cryptic statement. "Perhaps there's nothing to learn about plants, because there's nothing to say about them." I didn't understand what he'd said, or what he'd meant by it. "What did you say?" I asked. He repeated the statement 3 times, and then the whole area was shaken by the roar of an Air Force jet flying low. "There! The world has just agreed with me," he said, putting his left hand to his ear. I found him very amusing. His laughter was contagious. "Are you from Arizona, Don Juan?" I asked, in an effort to keep the conversation centered around his being my informant. He looked at me and nodded affirmatively. His eyes seemed to be tired. I could see the white underneath his pupils. "Were you born in this locality?" He nodded his head again, without answering me. It seemed to be an affirmative gesture, but it also seemed to be the nervous headshake of a person who's thinking. "And where are you from, yourself?" he asked. "I come from South America," I said. "That's a big place. Do you come from all of it?" His eyes were piercing again as he looked at me. I began to explain the circumstances of my birth, but he interrupted me. "We're alike in this respect," he said. "I live here now, but I'm really a Yaqui from Sonora."
"Is that so? I myself come from..."
He didn't let me finish.
I know," he said.
"You are who you are, from wherever you are, as I am a Yaqui from Sonora."
His eyes were very shiny, and his laughter was strangely unsettling. He made me feel as if he'd caught me in a lie. I experienced a peculiar sensation of guilt. I had the feeling he knew something I didn't know, or didn't want to tell. My strange embarrassment grew. He must have noticed it, for he stood up and asked me if I wanted to go eat in a restaurant in town. Walking back to his home and then driving into town made me feel better, but I wasn't quite relaxed. I somehow felt threatened, although I couldn't pinpoint the reason. I wanted to buy him some beer in the restaurant. He said that he never drank, not even beer. I laughed to myself. I didn't believe him. The friend who had put us in contact had told me that the old man was plastered out of his mind most of the time. I really didn't mind if he was lying to me about not drinking. I liked him. There was something very soothing about his person. I must have had a look of doubt on my face, for he then went on to explain that he used to drink in his youth, but that one day he simply dropped it.
"People hardly ever realize that we can cut anything from our lives, anytime, just like that."
He snapped his fingers. "Do you think that one can stop smoking or drinking that easily?" I asked.
"Sure," he said, with great conviction. "Smoking and drinking are nothing. Nothing at all, if we want to drop them."
At that very moment, the water that was boiling in the coffee percolator made a loud perking sound.
"Hear that?"
Don Juan exclaimed with a shine in his eyes.
"The boiling water agrees with me."
Then he added after a pause,
"A man can get agreements from everything around him."
At that crucial instant, The coffee percolator made a truly obscene gurgling sound. He looked at the percolator and softly said, "Thank you," nodded his head, and then broke into a roaring laughter. I was taken aback. His laughter was a bit too loud, but I was genuinely amused by it all. My first real session with my informant ended then. He said goodbye at the door of the restaurant. I told him I had to visit some friends and that I would like to see him again at the end of the following week. "When will you be home?" I asked. He scrutinized me.
"Whenever you come," he replied.
"I don't know exactly when I can come."
"Just come then, and don't worry."
"What if you're not in?"
"I'll be there," he said, smiling, and walked away.
I ran after him and asked him if he would mind my bringing a camera with me to take pictures of him in his house.
"That's out of the question," he said, with a frown.
"How about a tape recorder? Would you mind that?"
"I'm afraid there's no possibility of that either."
I became annoyed and began to fret. I said I saw no logical reason for his refusal. Don Juan shook his head negatively. "Forget it," he said forcefully, "and if you still want to see me, don't ever mention it again." I staged a weak final complaint. I said that pictures and recordings were indispensable to my work. He said that there was only one thing which was indispensable for anything we did. He called it the spirit. "One can't do without the spirit," he said, "and you don't have it. Worry about that, and not about pictures."
"What do you..."
He interrupted me with a movement of his hand and walked backwards a few steps.
"Be sure to come back," he said softly, and waved goodbye.
2. Erasing Personal History. Thursday, December 22, 1960. Don Juan was sitting on the floor by the door of his house, with his back against the wall. He turned over a wooden milk crate and asked me to sit down and make myself at home. I offered him some cigarettes. I had brought a carton of them. He said he didn't smoke, but he accepted the gift. We talked about the coldness of the desert nights and other ordinary topics of conversation. I asked him if I was interfering with his normal routine. He looked at me with a sort of frown and said he had no routines and that I could stay with him all afternoon if I wanted to. I'd prepared some genealogy and kinship charts that I wanted to fill out with his help. I'd also compiled, from the ethnographic literature, a long list of culture traits that were purported to belong to the Indians of the area. I wanted to go through the list with him and mark all the items that were familiar to him. I began with the kinship charts. "What did you call your father?" I asked.
"I called him Dad," he said with a very serious face.
I felt a little bit annoyed, but I proceeded on the assumption that he hadn't understood. I showed him the chart and explained that one space was for the father and another space was for the mother. I gave as an example the different words used in English and in Spanish for father and mother. I thought that perhaps I should have taken mother first.
"What did you call your mother?" I asked. "I called her Mom," he replied in a naive tone.
"I mean, what other words did you use to call your father and mother? How did you call them?" I said, trying to be patient and polite. He scratched his head and looked at me with a stupid expression.
"Golly," he said, "you got me there. Let me think."
After a moment's hesitation, he seemed to remember something, and I got ready to write.
"Well," he said, as if he were involved in serious thought, "how else did I call them? I called them, hey, hey, Dad! Hey, hey, Mom!"
I laughed against my desire. His expression was truly comical, and at that moment I didn't know whether he was a preposterous old man pulling my leg or whether he was really a simpleton. Using all the patience I had, I explained to him that these were very serious questions, and that it was very important for my work to fill out the forms. I tried to make him understand the idea of a genealogy and personal history. "What were the names of your father and mother?" I asked. He looked at me with clear, kind eyes. "Don't waste your time with that crap," he said softly, but with unsuspected force. I didn't know what to say. It was as if someone else had uttered those words. A moment before, he had been a fumbling, stupid Indian scratching his head, and then, in an instant, he'd reversed the roles. I was the stupid one, and he was staring at me with an indescribable look that wasn't a look of arrogance or defiance or hatred or contempt. His eyes were kind and clear and penetrating. "I don't have any personal history," he said after a long pause. "One day, I found out that personal history was no longer necessary for me. And like drinking, I dropped it." I didn't quite understand what he meant by that. I suddenly felt ill at ease, threatened. I reminded him that he'd assured me that it was all right to ask him questions. He reiterated that he didn't mind at all. "I don't have personal history anymore," he said, and looked at me probingly. "I dropped it one day, when I felt it was no longer necessary." I stared at him, trying to detect the hidden meanings of his words. "How can one drop one's personal history?" I asked in an argumentative mood. "One must first have the desire to drop it," he said, "and then one must proceed harmoniously to chop it off, little by little." "Why should anyone have such a desire?" I exclaimed. I had a terribly strong attachment to my personal history. My family roots were deep. I honestly felt that without them, my life had no continuity or purpose. "Perhaps you should tell me what you mean by dropping one's personal history," I said. "To do away with it, that's what I mean," he replied cuttingly. I insisted that I mustn't have understood the proposition. "Take you, for instance," I said. "You are a Yaqui. You can't change that." "Am I?" he asked, smiling. "How do you know that?" "True," I said. "I can't know that with certainty at this point, but you know it. And that's what counts. That's what makes it personal history." I felt I'd driven a hard nail in. "The fact that I know whether I'm a Yaqui or not doesn't make it personal history," he replied. "Only when someone else knows that does it become personal history, and I assure you that no one will ever know that for sure." I'd written down what he'd said in a clumsy way. I stopped writing and looked at him. I couldn't figure him out. I mentally ran through my impressions of him. The mysterious and unprecedented way he'd looked at me during our first meeting, the charm with which he'd claimed that he received agreement from everything around him, his annoying humor and his alertness, his look of bona fide stupidity when I asked about his father and mother, and then the unsuspected force of his statements which had snapped me apart. "You don't know what I am, do you?" he said, as if he were reading my thoughts. "You will never know who or what I am, because I don't have a personal history." He asked me if I had a father. I told him I did. He said that my father was an example of what he had in mind. He urged me to remember what my father thought of me. "Your father knows everything about you," he said. "So he has you all figured out. He knows who you are and what you do, and there's no power on earth that can make him change his mind about you." Don Juan said that everybody that knew me had an idea about me, and that I kept feeding the idea with everything I did.
"Don't you see?" he asked dramatically.
"You must renew your personal history.